Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
Bye-bye. Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
Tomorrow's show, we will talk with our buddy Russ Dorsey, a.k.a. Dr. Jerry Russ. He's out here flexing on TV last week, so we will ask him about that, and we will talk baseball with him. We will review the White Sox first game in Toronto as they start a nine-game gauntlet. Toronto, Tampa, Dodgers. And they do it without Tim Anderson. Maybe we'll get an update on T.A., later on today, we'll see. I suspect that we'll probably get an update when they come back and take on the Dodgers, but we shall see. While I was driving around in Arizona, I found a really good, there's a Bowie mural. I'll post it on Instagram. And I was listening to it while I was looking at it while I was listening to Hit and Run. And I was listening to Matt Spiegel talk about the problems of the Chicago White Sox and trying to fix all of those things. They got a lot of problems. Could have been the whole show.
What's the Bowie, a David Bowie mural?
Yeah,
or a David Bodie mural?
No,
there's
no David Bodie mural, although
Not yet. Maybe
there's one in Mesa. I don't know. I didn't go looking, but I can the next time I'm out there. But in the city proper, there is, like, in the Coronado neighborhood, which is like my favorite neighborhood in Phoenix. There's an eight-panel mural of Bowie's different phases.
Wow, that's kind
of
cool.
I'll text you some of the pics, Speed.
Please
do. Check it out. Because I was like, oh, man, like I was listening to you, and then I turned the corner. I was like, I got to stop and get out of my car. This is a David Bowie mural.
Just saw, just watching David Bowie in one of my favorite movies the other night. Might be my favorite Christopher Nolan.
Zoolander?
No. Might be my favorite Christopher Nolan movie. The Prestige. I love The Prestige. Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale and Michael Caine and Scarlett Johansson and David Bowie as Nikolai Tesla. I was just watching that the other night. Bowie, he's just got such a presence, man.
You seem very hesitant to give that your top Christopher Nolan distinction.
There's a lot of really good Christopher Nolans.
Yeah, there's a lot.
There's a lot, man. I mean,
I guess I probably
Batman Begins.
Yep.
Is probably where I have to go. The Dark Knight is brilliant. It's a little long, but that's, you know.
So you like Batman Begins over The Dark Knight?
Yeah, most people would say The Dark Knight is his magnum opus.
I would say Batman Begins, I think, is freaking elegant and perfect.
They're both great. I mean, Ledger in The Dark Knight makes me, I guess, with the masses. I think The Dark Knight's the best.
I understand. But other Nolans, I mean, Inception is pretty great.
Inception is great. If you're willing to go there with him on the ride,
I will suspend my disbelief for you, Mr. Nolan.
And you're okay with the ending? Then yeah,
none of us are okay with the ending.
I know, but if you're okay with the ending of Inception, you have to admit that it's an incredible like movie experience.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But I can see why the ending would completely ruin everything for some people.
But it did ruin it, but none of us loved it.
Yeah. Okay. I say you got to be okay with it. You got to just be okay with the ending of Inception.
You know why I was okay with it? Because, like, you know, do we get clarity in life? Do we? Do we really? I think that was the point. You know?
Sure.
But I like clarity in movies.
You like clarity in movies, but also, like, if you go with someone on that journey and you are suspending disbelief and you're confused and like it sometimes feels like you're like intentionally being deceived and confused.
Take care of me at the end.
Take care of me at the end.
I understand.
Like it's got to be one or the other.
I saw Memento in the theater way back when. I think that was his first one with Guy, what's his name? Guy Pearce.
Yeah.
A pretty freaky.
I haven't seen that movie. I only saw it once.
Oh,
a long
man.
Time ago.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've. That one didn't impact me the way that other Nolan pieces have.
And then I never saw Interstellar.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Everyone loved Interstellar.
I liked Interstellar. But
I never saw it.
I might have been three shades to the wind when I saw Interstellar, and it's been a little while. Tenet, I was disappointed in Tenet. I was so ready for it, so excited for it, and then I was just like, "What are we doing here?"
So you were willing
you're
to suspend.
It didn't hold together for me. Like it slowly unraveled. You know how all these they try to like tell you the plot while they're also telling you the technology and the context at the same time.
Yeah, the expository like. Dialogue that goes on where they're just like, oh, you know, this is what's happening.
Right. And they got to that part too late. By then, the plot had already happened, and I didn't care about the plot. You know what I mean? It's like, it's totally a method of storytelling that is so commonplace these days, but you got to be good at that pacing, or else before you know it, the movie's over, and you're like, okay, now I get it, but I don't care anymore. Screw you.
We leaving out Dunkirk? Dunkirk was a pretty awesome way to shoot a movie. In a like Dunkirk,
I've never seen continuous shot, right?
Isn't yeah, that I mean, what it, is? It wasn't really right. You can't like
I thought that was the other one.
1917.
1917 is the continuous shot.
Yeah, 1917
continuous shot. Okay,
but no, but
that's not Nolan, right?
No, Dunkirk is Nolan, and it was pretty awesome.
Dunkirk like made my heart pound.
I never saw Dunkirk.
Like the sound in that movie is so. Exceptional.
Yeah.
That like if you see it, if you got like a good system or you saw it in the theater, it's just like, whoa.
That's the thing, man. His movie making skills are so good.
He's a talented guy.
Yeah, he's a talented guy. Good.
Talented.
Good run. He's had a good run.
Yeah. Wow. We reached a consensus.
Great. Let me take that hard left turn back to sports and go, the way that you described Tenet. Is that the way we're going to describe the White Sox season? Because I heard you and Guff talking about it on Sunday morning, and I found myself going, oh, no. Oh, no. And then, like, you're already doing that, and that's before Tim Anderson gets hurt.
Oh, it's really hard to not be thoroughly dispirited at this point once the TA injury happens. I mean, you're living in a state of frustration and having to accept the mediocrity of your team here at the Memorial Day tent pole, and then the best player on your team is now going to be out for what you hope is just 30 days in the middle of a brutal stretch of games. This is a dark, dark moment in this season.
Lawrence, sure. Why did you say they're not going to get an update on TA until the Dodgers series? Just because that's when
Rick talks. I mean, the update is that he's on the 10-day IL.
Right.
I imagine a more thorough update will be when Rick can talk. But maybe he talks to people in Toronto or in Tampa.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, what you're saying is totally reasonable and logical in terms of like that's when Rick speaks and Rick is the person who. Gives updates on these sorts of
things. Fegan called him the Grim Reaper.
Yeah, but like, come on. They have the MRI results on Tim Anderson. They've got billboards all over town. Baseball needs more Tim Andersons. Like, maybe this is meatball-y, but like, don't you owe it to fans? Like, if you have an update on Tim Anderson,
yes.
Let Tony share the update on the road. Let TA tweet it out. Like, put out a press release. Like, that should not be 10 days from injury to announcement of like what the injury actually is.
No, but I think there won't have to be a commensurate roster move other than the 10-day because they could then expand that to however long they want.
I understand. I just, you know, I'm sure this is not exclusive to the White Sox. I bet you a lot of teams would handle it that way, but like sports would be better, right? Transparency's been in the news a little bit when we've been talking about the local sports scene. Like, sports would just be better. There's no competitive advantage to keeping Tim Anderson's injury.
I just think that like there go. Look, he's injured his hamstring. He's recovering, and we took a look and it looks like he's going to recover. And then maybe we'll know more in a week.
Yeah,
and they go. It could be. Here's a week,
but they could go official release on a groin and say expected to be out 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, just give us what you think. Yeah. Give us when you have it. Give the timetable. He matters so much, and he's so likable, and he's the best baseball player in Chicago.
It just sucked to watch that with the way that he throws sometimes is so. He doesn't have the greatest footwork. He's never had the greatest footwork. It is better now, but there are still some times he's just happy to like make kind of an awkward body throw or throw across his body as he's backing up into center field like that. And the arm is good enough, and he's like good enough at adjusting and varying the flight of the ball to have it work. But like, I did have that one moment of thinking, man, if he stops and plants and makes that throw, does that happen? Does that groin pull happen?
Well, I mean, I think Stoney had it right yesterday, Spiegs, where he felt like the movement to the left is what hurt the groin, and the throw was because he was already hurting.
Ah, there it is. That would make sense. Because it was an awkward, it certainly was an awkward throw. So if the movement happens first and then he just gets rid of it as best he can.
Yeah, and it still ends up making the play, but it felt like, even with the way that they walked it off, it's just like, ugh. Like, there's still that dread. And now I'm over here like, how do they deploy their defense? And how do they deploy a lineup now? Who's qualified to be the White Sox leadoff hitter? See that silence that you guys had right there?
Luis Robert.
Okay, coming off of COVID.
Yeah, but I'd probably go ahead and put Luis Robert up there.
But don't you kind of need him to drive in runs?
Yes.
Grandal?
Maybe that'll get him, and he has been walking a little bit more. Maybe that'll get him looking to walk. Maybe you can't do what the White Sox have been doing this season, Danny, and that they've stolen bases. Like, they've stolen above 90%. But that also makes me feel like they're probably a bad team, that they're stealing bases as much as they are, because they're trying any way they can to manufacture runs because they're not getting runs from the middle of their lineup.
I think you put AJ Pollock in an RBI spot. And even though he hasn't done it with consistency, he's done it in his life and his career with consistency. Put the pressure on him and put him in that RBI spot. You're worried about having Robert in, and you put Robert up top.
Okay.
Like Vaughn too, maybe Grandal too, every once in a while, especially if the matchup helps against a righty.
Okay. So here's the other question. How would you feel about Jake Berger playing second base?
God, who's playing short again?
It's either Leury Mendick. Or Mendick,
yeah, it's
right?
Leury or Mendick with Jake Berger at second.
I mean, Berger's bat plays.
I gotta find space for it.
Yes, you do.
Right.
Because these guys aren't producing.
Well, I was talking to Speaks a little bit about this before the show. Help me out here. How much am I supposed to be grading offensive performance on a curve? Because just production is down, like across the sport.
Okay, so what, the average OPS right now is about at 700, Spiegs? Is that where it is? Like average all the way around the league is maybe 696 or something like that?
Compared to what was it a year or two ago?
If we go like over the last 5 years, like average is somewhere around like between 730 and 750.
Mm. Okay, that's significantly down.
So it's down. But even if I gave you 696, Danny, and you start looking at the OPSs of the White Sox.
Oh, no question.
Oh, my God.
No question.
You see a bunch of fives and a fours in there somewhere.
Right. Moncada, Grandal, Pollock.
Harrison.
But, like, yeah. There's only 12 players.
Leury.
There's only 12 players in baseball with an OPS over 900. Like, so that when you're looking at a real good year and you're trying to figure out is somebody having a real good year so far, so that lower number, 800 plus, is a pretty damn good year right now.
Well, that's what I was thinking about. Like, Contreras, everyone's like, he's having a great year.
He is.
Right. Is it, OPS is like 860?
870, yeah. 873.
Which
18th in MLB.
Yeah. Okay, great. That is a great season, but it's not
your Bryce Harper numbers. It's not your superstar numbers. Right. Like your Manny Machado.
And he's
numbers.
Got like 6 home runs, right? Like the leader has 18. So it's an interesting definition of a great season. We've seen seasons in baseball recently where this season from Wilson Contreras would merely be described as a good season. But because of where offense is in the sport right now, it is fair then to grade that on a curve and say that he is having a great season.
Absolutely. And when you factor in that it's a catcher and there is no other catcher with an OPS over 700, there's nobody. So,
but I think that's interesting. Like how do we calibrate, like, in this season with when the ball is like this and when the rules are like this or whatever, like, uh-huh. then a great season is X, and now with the ball being like it is now, it's a different characterization.
I just want people to get on base.
The slap hitter Will Smith, the slappy one, has a 736 OPS. So he's the one catcher with an OPS.
The one catcher with over 700.
Yeah, other than Wilson.
Okay.
Meanwhile, I look up and down the White Sox lineup, Danny, and I see 500 and
I know
600 and a 400 and I actually have enjoyed. This is part of the problem. There are players on this White Sox team where I like some of what they do. I like Harrison at second defensively. I can't play him there if he's going to hit 190. Like that just, especially with Tim out. I've got to get every run I can, which means, yes, on a team that's already defensively deficient, I am putting someone who is a corner guy in the middle of the diamond. Okay, but I need someone who might be able to come up with a hit for me.
Sound like me in football. Let's err on the side of offense, baby.
Well, you're so desperate for it. And here we are bemoaning White Sox defense, and we're about to start a... And yet you still want to put Jake Berger out there because you're realizing that the offense is just absolutely killing you.
And the pitching's been... The starting pitching for the White Sox has been so good. And yet, here they are with a win expectancy. They're playing above their win expectancy right now. For their run differential, Spiegs, they're supposed to be 18-28, and they're 23-23. What am I supposed to do with that?
Oh, God.
They're not good.
No.
They're not good. They're not good. They're not good.
A damn shame.
And this is a... Come on, man. Toronto, Tampa, L.A.? Come on, man.
Yeah, I saw one of those. First time I saw one. If the playoffs started today... They would be out of it. Giants would be in it. Like, some weird teams would be in it who you don't think are having necessarily the greatest years, but...
Well, that's the expansion.
Yeah.
Right? Well,
didn't the Nats win the World Series after starting 18-32?
Yeah.
Yes. And the Braves were under 500 at the break last year and for a couple weeks after that. So, yeah, no, I mean, there's all sorts of that. That precedence in there, but they'll have to make some moves, and they also just they haven't looked good.
Meanwhile, in Detroit, the Twins lead 8-1.
Oh, it's too early. Are you scoreboard watching Twins games?
Oh yeah,
no,
Danny. I think the White Sox might be 10 games out by June 10th.
I'll take the under on that. Obviously, if that happens, it's a huge problem. But man, baseball. I don't tell anybody how to fan.
The good thing is...
Do what you want, but I that would be a miserable experience to be scoreboard watching.
I got to.
That's baseball.
I got to.
Not in May.
It is often a miserable experience.
Oh. For so June life, specifically, I've got to. Because luckily for the White Sox, the Twins, their schedule takes a similar turn like the White Sox schedule where the games get tougher. But them having 5 games against Detroit... This week, not great for the South Side 9.
Yeah, something unfortunate happened for the White Sox here at the same time that they're having their own struggles, and that's that Royce Lewis got sent down, and they let him, you know, come back with like 4 different gloves, and he's going to play center when Buxton doesn't. He's going to play third sometimes. He'll play short when Correa needs a blow, and now all of a sudden they have 3 incredible athletes, 3 real 5-tool guys if Royce Lewis is going to be as good as he can be. So it's but they're next up for this Toronto thing. this vaccination issue that we'll talk about. They're next up, and they're going to be missing some big, big players. Carlos Correa just tested positive for COVID. They've got others on their COVID list, and then they've got others apparently unvaccinated. Toronto is now the one-stop shop for, you know, figuring out the vaccination status of your ball club and having to deal with the ramifications thereafter.
That was nice of them to make it nice and easy for us.
For Toronto?
Yeah, for Toronto.
Hey, did anybody know the vaccination rate of this team? Send them to Toronto, then we'll find out.
Then we'll know. And here's where it evens out a little bit. So you have the five games in Detroit. Then the Twins go to Toronto, like Spiegs is saying. And then after that, they're home against the Yankees in Tampa Bay and then go on the road at Seattle. So there's going to be opportunities, but the problem isn't the other team. The problem is the White Sox.
Well, that's why I don't really get the schedule watching thing.
Well, like, because I got to know what they got to get to, you know, and already being five down.
Yeah.
Yeah, but none of it matters if you don't play better.
That's true.
So, like, that's the thing for me. Like, yes, you're right, Speaks. Part of baseball is inherently miserable, right? It's a sport of failure and all of that, no question. But, like, adding in scoreboard watching Twins Tigers May 31st.
That can be fun, though, because sometimes they lose.
I know.
You're watching and you're open. The other day,
but it won't matter if the Sox don't play better. Like, all of that is moot.
See, now that goes back to the old Rev Watkins theory. Decades ago on The Score, caller Rev Watkins used to call up and say, the Cubs don't have to get better. Everybody else just has to get a little bit worse, which is a hell of a theory. So if the Twins theoretically fall back to the pack, then the division becomes more winnable. Is the dream.
Correct.
As you're watching Minnesota.
Correct.
You're watching and you're schadenfreuding all over Minnesota.
But it's already the most winnable division. They have the lowest win percentage of any first place team in the sport by far.
Yeah.
But they're not running away with anything. You're just bad.
But they could. This is a moment where the Twins could.
That's my point.
By the way, Royce Lewis ran into the wall and made a great catch the other day and ran into a wall in center field. I don't know how hurt he is. And so now no Correa going to Toronto. So maybe it'll even out, Lawrence, as you watch, hoping for the Twins to implode. Maybe it'll start to even out.
I'm always hoping for the Twins to implode.
You don't have like score alerts on your phone, though, do you?
No, I actually, you know what? I took the alerts off my phone.
That's smart.
Like on everything. Like I took all the widgets off of it, and I've actually really enjoyed that. I can go seek what I want instead of it being presented to me.
Have you muted texts?
No. You know what? I don't understand on the iPhones. I don't know if this happens with the others, but. Now people are saying, well, this text was quietly delivered.
Yes.
I'm like, what does that mean?
It means that
they don't feel like a vibration or a ding.
They're muted. So it's all creates the possibility for so much passive aggressive feelings. Read receipts, man. And just
you learned about the read receipt game and it blew your mind.
It blew my mind.
That's game.
Someone left you on read.
Oh, yeah. That's game like 102, 201, maybe. You got to get to the 500 level.
Well, how about silently received? Does that qualify as a read receipt? It's like,
no.
Is that person asleep? Like, I don't know.
I think delivered quietly is just that they have text notifications muted.
Right.
So it does not indicate whether they've read it or
not. Like us trying to figure out technology.
Sure. Like maybe Tanny's actually spending quality time. He's got quality time with the family going on. Or maybe Sean Sears is napping from his crazy overnight then hit
specific
and run.
Examples. Wow. Yeah. There you go. I'm just hypothetical here. Oh, and there's Sean Sears getting thrown into the fire. Wow. Sorry,
anyone
Speaks.
Who produces the Speaks.
There's no sorry. You live your life. I'm just trying to figure out what I'm supposed to do with it.
I'm supposed to just leave my phone behind. I'd go places I don't even take it with me.
Really?
You feel
that comfortable?
Lately, I have. Like, if I want to take Willie to the beach in the morning or something like that, 2 hours, leave my phone behind.
Oh, good for you.
That's fantastic,
it's
Shane.
Euphoric. That's good producing, too, I think.
I can't be open to you guys all the time.
That was unnecessary.
I know, I'm just kidding. Welcome to the afternoon show.
Jeez. He's out here talking about his lovely dog, Willie, and the quality time with her.
I was just kidding. It was a cheap excuse for a joke, and as always, I sell out my morals to make the joke. Oh, it's a terrible moment. Shane, I'm glad you have a couple hours away from the phone. That's
how you doing
good.
Today, Lawrence?
Shane, I'm doing great, man. It's good to see you. It's good to see you.
Sold out.
Steve Stone today, Lawrence, at 3 o'clock. I'm sure he'll make everybody feel better. And lots to do, man. It was a busy weekend.
Oh, boy. Hold on. Sorry. Yasmani Grandal is leading off, Danny. Called that. Here's your White Sox starting lineup.
Okay.
Grandal leading off, then Vaughn, then Abreu, then Jake Berger at third. No Yoan Moncada in this lineup. Sheets, Engel, McGuire, Josh Harrison at second, Danny Mendick. But Grandal leading off in the first, Tim Anderson.
Well, you know what I always have said about Tony La Russa. He's a great mind.
Yeah.
Great. So he's felt the same way that I did. So,
well,
you know,
we know that he, even though Grandal's having a terrible season, he's still leading the White Sox in walk rate, correct?
I think that's true.
Yeah. I think he's at 14 or 15% or something
and
like that.
And there's no Luis Robert in this lineup. I thought Robert was back today.
Robert's off. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's why I asked Feegan about the Moncada stuff, where the spectrum is guy had COVID, had no symptoms, is totally fine. And then on the other end of that spectrum is Yoan Moncada, who might still be dealing with it.
That's so crazy, man.
Yeah, it's a variable that we just won't know. And you try to have some grace with it, but the players would tell you if they're good enough to put on the uniform, they're good enough to perform. So it's a tough one.
Just breathe.
But just not if somebody's
not near someone with COVID.
Respiratory droplets.
Yeah. You don't want to breathe their COVID air.
Put a mask on.
That's right.
Bullcrap.
All right. Well, that's what you got to do. Well,
that's the show, Lawrence.
I'm going to go home and live in dread. You guys have a wonderful rest of the show, and we'll talk some more White Sox baseball with you tomorrow.
Don't let it do it to you, man. Don't let it get you that down. Come on now. Come on now. You were just in Arizona.
It was great.
There you go. Focus on the good, buddy.
And Speaks, I sent you, it was quietly delivered to your phone.
Text
I sent you of the Bowie mural.
Oh, there they are. Looks very quiet.
That's just the back of someone's house, Speaks. Like, legit. Like, it's a fence that separated, I think it was a bank, and someone's yard. Man. And on the back of it is a Bowie mural.
I don't love any specific musician enough for that. Like, there's nobody that I would just choose and be like, that is my entire identity.
What if it was you?
I don't love myself.
A tattoo of himself?
No, not a tattoo, a mural. Like, what if the mural was of Matt Spiegel performer?
I would, restraining order. Yeah. Like, you are that big of a fan of Brother?
Yeah, what's wrong with you? I would never want to belong to a club that would have someone like me as a member.
That's right.
Groucho Marx?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. I feel good that I got that right, so I'm going to leave. Now see you guys later.
All right. Not sure the Taney's Open is going to make you feel better today, though, Lawrence, but after the Open, I hope you have a much, much better day. Taney's Open kicks us off. Park at the Spiegel on the score.
Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hanses and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.